Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
This is How to Behave. Dick Cheney's daughters are spatting in public over their opposing views on gay marriage. Liz, who's running for Senate in Wyoming, says she's against it. Mary, who is gay married, posted on Facebook, quote, "Liz, this isn't just an issue on which we disagree. You're just wrong and on the wrong side of history," end quote. The wrong side of history. This is a topic the Cheney family knows something about. Shockingly, Dick is on the right side this time, actually supporting gay marriage. Dick, you big old progressive. We hardly knew you. How to behave when you're drunk and confident that you can win this year's Darwin Award? Some asshole thought it would be cool to slide down a railing at the Jets game this weekend. He ended up falling off the upper deck, injuring himself and another fan. Also in the news, something about the website healthcare.gov, although I haven't really been following it. Maybe we can discuss it today. This is How to Behave, the National Health Program Show. To my right, as always, Hannah Howard.
Hi, Brian.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm awesome. So you're a young woman. You're in basically good health, I imagine.
I am.
Do you ever go to the doctor?
Occasionally.
Occasionally?
Yeah.
Are you insured?
I'm insured.
Through your employer?
No, actually, I will soon be insured by my employer, but as I just turned 26, I am insured by my family's employer.
So Obamacare has already been good for you.
It's allowed Obamacare has been very good for me.
To stay on your parents'
health care. Yeah, which was really helpful for...
I have mixed feelings about this. I think it's a good law, but I also think it's another thing that is infantilizing adults in our country. Like, 26-year-olds should be grown damn up and not on their parents. Shouldn't be living at home anymore. Shouldn't be...
Well, I don't live at home.
I moved out when I was 30, so I'm not one to talk. But
like a gold star? I don't know.
You get a gold star because you moved out.
Right.
Yeah, and you have a job.
But... I kind of feel like it's really tough to get started, and if you could get some health care, like, that's not the worst thing in the universe.
It is. Well, we actually think it shouldn't be an issue at all, and we're going to talk about that today.
Exactly.
Also in the studio with us is Elena Matt.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Elena. It's good to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
On the phone with us today from Physicians for a National Health Program, we have Dr. Daniel Lugassi. Am I pronouncing that right, doctor?
Yep, that's great. Thank you, Brian. Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's pnhp.org on the international worldwide internet thing, right?
Yep, perfect.
Why don't we start with the basics? Can you tell us a little bit about what Physicians for a National Health Program is aiming for and how they're going about trying to get us there?
Sure. First, let me thank you, Brian, and everyone on the show for having me as a physician and now a member of PNHP for more than 10 or 13 years since I was a first-year medical student. There really isn't anything more important, I think, in U.S. healthcare right now than changing the way we deliver it. And the only true solution is a single-payer system. And it boils down to something very simple. We at PNHP believe that healthcare is a human right, that all people living in the United States, residents, undocumented, immigrants, everybody has the right to access free, comprehensive medical coverage. And so we believe not only is that the right system to deliver, but the studies in the literature is pretty clear that it's the only economical and financially sound system. In the U.S. right now, we have one thing, and that is private health insurance that dominates the industry. What we really want to do is remove that for-profit private health insurance industry and simplify it. We call it a single-payer system, or some people have heard us call it Medicare for all. When you're 65, what happens in the United States? You get Medicare. You're eligible for a certain amount of health benefits. Well, we would like to expand and improve Medicare to cover everybody in the United States.
And Medicare is not totally comprehensive, right? It doesn't cover everything.
That...
Excellent. And that's why we say an expanded and improved, because we have just seen continual cuts and austerity budget changes that just continually cut Medicare and limit what it covers. So right now you have these private Medicare plans, which people can't get what they need with basic Medicare, so they go out and purchase another private plan to assist them in affording care.
I think it's actually called supplemental Medicare.
Yeah, they're supplemental Medicare Advantage plans.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so PNHP has been a very strong advocate for a single-payer system, and that system would mean a privately run, publicly funded system. So you would go to any hospital you want, any doctor that you want, and there would be no copays, there would be no fees for all standard necessary medical care, and the government would pay the price to the hospital, to the provider, to the hospital, to the doctor, and to the pharmacy, etc. And the way we would fund that system is we would have a progressive tax. Now, that's the part that most people cringe, right? They hear increasing taxes, and they hear, oh, my God, we can't have that.
Well, we would rather pay a private business $1,000 to do something than pay $100 in taxes to have the same thing done.
Of course.
Right. Or way more than $1,000.
Because taxes are evil. Right?
Like $30,000.
Right. And then there's this myth that, like, the private sector is fabulous and the public sector is inherently inept. But it's like everybody can be inept.
Right.
And
my health insurance company is the most inept company I work with
right now.
Right. Far worse than the DMV.
Exactly.
They make money on being inept. They cannot be not inept.
Right.
If they start to do things in a logical manner, then they're not going to be a successful business. And as a physician and an American, to me, there's nothing more patriotic than giving us all health care. And when you're in the healthcare industry, it's profitable to have healthy patients and unprofitable to have sick people, which...
Right.
To me, as a doctor, that's the exact opposite of how we approach a problem.
Yeah, you didn't get into this business just so you could help rich people?
Yes, exactly.
Right.
So, in it to help everybody. But I don't care if you're rich or you're poor. I just want to be able to treat you and do what is necessary and not have to worry about whether you can afford it. And, you know, there are days where I go home from work and I worry about... Have I just bankrupt somebody because they came in with a serious medical illness that needed to be addressed?
Yeah.
And maybe it ended up being not very serious or very serious. And now that to me is the most embarrassing thing that we have in this world that the U.S. does not have compared to other countries. We have medical bankruptcy.
Yeah, and I think in this country you regularly hear people choose not to go to the doctor, mm-hmm. not to deal with a health issue because they can't afford it.
Sometimes even people with insurance.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Brian, I would love to just tell you that, you know, one of the greatest piece of kind of evidence to advocate for a system like this is of all the people who went medically bankrupt in the United States, nearly 3/4 of them, almost 70%, had private health insurance when they got sick. Not Medicaid, not Medicare, private health insurance. So at the top of the hour, you guys started discussing about linking your health insurance to your job. That's what happens. You either get sick and you can't keep working, so you lose your health insurance, or you get sick and you can't afford to make enough money to pay for it out of pocket.
Yeah, you reach your maximum and then they stop paying and you're left with hundreds of thousands of dollars of bills.
Or simply, you know, whatever procedure you need.
It's crazily expensive.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. It boggles my mind that we have a system where people who work hard and do the right thing, have health insurance, we're all just one diagnosis away from bankruptcy. And we defend that system. I don't know why anybody thinks that that's a good idea. If, you know, if any of us get a brain tumor or leukemia or get hit by a bus, we should be able to just deal with the disease and not worry also about having to file for bankruptcy.
Absolutely. I mean, and I'm as an emergency physician, I would have to tell you that I deal with those kind of things every day. And I would tell you there's not a shift that goes by where someone doesn't ask me, how much is this going to cost? I'm worried about this. And for me, it's a doctor-patient relationship that has been ruined. You know, people are wondering, am I trying to make money off of them by doing some tests or a CAT scan? Or they're worried about what it might cost, so they don't tell me how bad the pain is or where it's going. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many layers of this, and we've created just a wall, a barrier for people to get health care. And so we're just creating sicker and sicker people. And it's just something that really has to change. So,
and it, sorry, it, what, one thing that boggles my mind, because I think that the major sort of backlash is this idea of, you know, the industry suddenly becoming not profitable, or the government imposing limits on how much companies can make.
Or but freeloaders say, enjoying the free
how
insurance.
How about just shift where profit goes? Because preventive healthcare can be its own fabulous industry, but, you know, taking care of ourselves should always be paramount.
Yeah, and the system that you're talking about, Doctor, is not taking away private businesses, right? You're still saying
it is not. No, it
hospitals
is really,
could be run for profit, right?
Well, no. They would not necessarily be run for profit, but they would still, you know, they would still gain profits to contribute to their operating budget. It's not, but what we do is we level the playing field. One hospital can't charge $10,000 for something and another $1,000. Right. These prices are also just really made in fantasy land. That's the best way to describe it. Mm-hmm. When you talk to the top health economists or just economists in general, the healthcare industry, the pharmaceutical industry, they're almost unfathomable industries and economic kind of examples that there's nothing in reality that compares to it. You know, most of the pharmaceutical industries and healthcare companies, they make profits double what the Fortune 500 companies make.
Now, I think we're going to need to talk about this when we get back from our break, but my question is going to be the problem there, or part of it anyway, is that the people making decisions are not the people paying. And
Absolutely. So
I want to talk to you when we get back about how your system might address that.
Cool.
But first, we're going to take a break. And in addition to that, when we come back, I am going to channel my inner Republican.
Okay.
This is how to behave.
I'm looking forward.
I'm ready for it.
You are listening to Intrigue by Obesity on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
We are back. Hannah went on a great diatribe there in our break that she's just finishing up about democracy and capitalism and Belgium, I think. No. So we are here with Dr. Daniel Lugasi from the Physicians for National Health Program. Before we follow up on where we left off, I have a question for you. Apparently, PNHP recently announced a new executive director, Matthew Petty.
Yep.
My question has to do with his photo on the website. Is that a very old photo, or is he actually 11 years old?
He is a young-looking, spry. I'm not sure what his age is, but I'll have to look at the new picture on the website there.
It looks like a picture out of their freshman yearbook or something. He's a good-looking guy, but he does not look old enough to be the executive director of anything.
Okay.
But that is neither here nor there.
So, yeah. But he is a young... He's younger than his age. Younger looking than his age.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I was asking you before about how the PNHP plan would address the separation between people who are making decisions and people who are paying. It sounds like if I were trying to offer an opposing view to what you said earlier, I would say that if nobody's paying copays and if nobody pays anything anytime they go to the doctor,
where's the money
that
coming
it would
from?
Be a free fall, like a great opportunity for abuse.
Right. And the people who will be making decisions is essentially what we would have are health advisory boards made up of physicians,
death panels.
Nurses.
You're going to have
death
panels. Say that.
Sorry, go on.
Basically made up of people who actually know medicine and make medical decisions. And they would look at hospital budgets, and they would basically allocate to the physicians, to the healthcare providers, this is what you're going to get for providing this service.
Are you talking about fee for service, or are you talking about something bigger like so-and-so has liver cancer, this is what we're going to pay?
Well, they're not the ones who are going to decide necessarily what they're going to pay, but we're looking at it now, unfortunately, on a state level. We'd like universal health care as a universal plan, which Obamacare kind of thwarted because really we were never allowed the opportunity to sell our case, despite President Obama talking single payer in his early campaign before 2008.
Yeah, that was a question I had for you. Is Obamacare a step in the right direction, or is it a negative for you guys because we went with that alternative instead of yours?
It's honestly a sidestep with maybe one half step forward. You see, there are going to be more people who are going to have insurance. The Medicaid coverage is expanding based on your income above the federal poverty limit. You have people like Hannah who are now, up until 26, able to be on their parents' COBRA, and there's going to be some measures of preventative health care and community health care that are implemented with Obamacare. But what we have not changed is we still have allowed the private health insurance industry to dominate the delivery of health care and be kind of the main gatekeeper. So all of these exchanges for the websites and everything that is moving forward, it's confusing because it's a complicated system. And you still have to figure out who gets what and who doesn't. And, yeah. and an insurance company, once again, their major goal is not to provide health care, it's to limit it. And when they limit it, they maximize profits, and their investors, if it's an investor-owned, which many of them are happy. And that's just not something that should be in medicine. We can have that in other parts of the country, and other industries, but healthcare cannot be made decision based on basically your ability to pay, and that's what we've set up.
Yep, I agree.
So we're going to have more people that are going to have health insurance, but how can this be a universal or Affordable Care Act when there's still going to be 23 million people uninsured? 26 states are essentially opting out. Which is embarrassing.
It's astonishing. We're saying we're going to give you hundreds of millions of dollars to expand Medicare for poor people, and the states are just saying,
no,
thanks.
Thank you.
Yes,
no.
Exactly.
Oh, so
and,
insane.
And I'd have to tell you that I know that this network is food centric, obviously, and your show in
and
the past.
Obviously, I have forgotten that.
What? Food? What?
We did a show on food a couple months ago, didn't we?
It would be wrong of me not to point out that the food industry probably is one of the most affected by not having a single payer system. And I would argue that most chefs, waiters, food service people are uninsured. Right,
I am sure that that is true.
Yeah, because it's very few employers in that industry who provide you with health insurance,
and when they
it's generally young people who do these jobs, and they don't have the money to buy their own health insurance.
Yeah,
and you know the boom in, you know, people worry about, well, if we spend 17% of our gross domestic product and you change the structure of the healthcare system, well, think about small businesses in the food service industry. If everyone had equal access to healthcare and how the employer would not have to worry about that, either them not having to worry about trying to provide their employees with health coverage or just not worrying about if they're employees get sick, that they're going to actually be able to get better.
All of us in the industry have experienced like somebody around us having to leave work because they didn't go to the doctor early and get some simple thing treated, and then they get really sick,
right. And
go to the free clinic, which, you know, the taxpayers end up paying for anyway.
Right, and that's the irony of it, is that we pay more than any other country in the world for our health care, but we don't cover everyone. And what's even sadder is when we look at outcomes as far as benefiting from health care, we don't do very well. We are often ranked, if not near the bottom, at the bottom of several of these studies as far as health care in general. The cost
is surprising
compared to other developed nations.
The whole system is so effed that how can good healthcare be the outcome of?
Yeah, well, exactly. How can our, you know, how can any of our measurements be good when such a big chunk of our population isn't getting healthcare?
Right. And you know, when it comes to raising taxes, when you have a progressive tax that the more you make, the more you pay in. Right now, in a single payer system, 95% of people would not pay any more into their taxes for health care. So you look at the premiums and everything that you would be saving as far as co-pays, it would basically equal out or be better for 95% of the population.
And the people who would have to pay more are people who can afford it.
Exactly. And it's not that much more. That's what, right now we're in a system where if you make a lot, your health care is a small percentage of your kind of budget.
Right.
If you are poor, health care takes up maybe 10, 15, 30% of your annual budget, which makes no sense.
Yeah.
Right?
You've brought up a lot of points that are helping me to channel my inner Republican, as I promised to
channel
do earlier.
Channel it. Yeah.
I own a business, and I do not understand why business owners are against the idea of having the hassle of managing a healthcare program taken away from them. It takes time and money to manage providing healthcare to my employees, and we're a small company. I mean, there are companies that have whole departments that are devoted to this. Why don't businesses who are generally led by conservative people line up and say, this would be awesome, so we don't have to pay for it anyway anymore? I don't get that.
I'm not sure. I mean, we work with a lot of unions, and the unions have been responsible for lots of different progressive movements throughout American history. And, you know, I think that the special interests or financial interests maybe sometimes are greater. And I think there's so much propaganda out there.
I was just going to say, they're better at marketing their side.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because how do you market such BS and do it so effectively?
Well, that brings me to my...
But somehow they have.
That's my next Republican point, which is, if I were a Republican, I would believe in personal responsibility, right?
Right.
Someone who doesn't pay their bills is not being personally responsible, right?
Right.
Anyone without health insurance won't be able to pay their bills if something goes wrong, except for the like top 0.1% of the population that could actually just write a check for $1 million for their care. So Republicans should be in favor of everybody being covered. And they're now defending a system where it makes it impossible for people to be personally responsible. And they're going so far as to run ads. Conservative groups are running ads telling people not to sign up for insurance.
I know.
Like, those are the opposite of conservative values.
I think it's just
they have nothing to stand on. I mean, you know, I love everyone, respect everyone, and I will come to the table and talk to anybody. But at some point with healthcare and the right-wing conservative, they really don't have a leg to stand on. I mean, if we want to have a government, if we want to be a civilized nation, there are a few basic things that we have to provide everyone. And if they don't see that improving healthcare of everyone improves the job force, improves people's morale, behavior, it's all linked. And the sad part to me is that when you basically say you don't want to provide health care, we know in this country it's based on your ability to pay. So you're discriminating based on race, social, and economic class.
And the same people, the same people who are making that discrimination, they're against health care being affordable, and they're also against raising the minimum wage.
Right.
They want to make sure that health care has to be purchased and make sure that 25% of the country literally cannot afford it.
It just kind of seems to equal if you're poor, you deserve to die if you're sick.
Exactly.
I mean,
it really does.
Right. Right.
Do you ever talk to people in European countries that they that's what they say. They say, "Oh yeah, America's health system is if you're poor, you can die."
But the thing is,
we hate you poor people.
Yeah, the thing is that the law protects us from that. If you walk into a hospital, they have to take care of you, even if you can't pay.
Yes.
And that's a good thing.
Right.
Which brings me to
become bankrupt.
Let's be clear on this. There are what we call EMTALA laws, where in emergent situations, the hospital does have to provide care. But they can still send you a bill. You can walk out. That it's got nothing to do with, you know, how sick you are or not sick you are. You'll still get a bill. And they'll still try to track you down and find you.
Yeah. But they also know you won't pay it, and so they charge double for everything so that those of us who do pay through insurance actually pay a whole lot more for what we're getting than what it should cost, right?
Well, I mean, there are avenues as far as they can't necessarily charge double. There are some restrictions and regulations, but some hospitals can actually claim more aid, in a sense, for taking care of people who aren't able to afford their care, and they inflate that aid, essentially. And it's called disproportionate share, essentially, funding. So if a hospital says, well, we had this many number of patients who couldn't pay for their bill, and their bill was $100,000 times 100 people, we can file for state and federal funds to say we're giving all of this aid out there.
Yeah, and so the rich, the people who are paying into the system, whether through taxes or through buying health insurance, are paying for the care of the poor as it is now. They're just doing it in the least effective, least efficient way possible.
Yep. I mean, a universal health care plan would save more than $400 billion a year.
Huh.
And in New York State, we have a New York health bill, which Assemblyman Gottfried and others have put together.
We're going to have him on soon. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's a New York State single-payer plan, and that's going to save by 2019, with the independent estimates, nearly $25-plus billion a year for New Yorkers. And you know, people once again have to remember, after the full implementation of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, there are still going to be more than 1.5 million New Yorkers uninsured.
And we're one of the good states, right?
And we're exactly, we're one of the good ones. And so when you look at a state like Mississippi, once again, that is opting out, basically saying if you're poor, black, uninsured, you can't make more than $11 a day to we don't care. We don't want money to help our own people in our own state. And so to me, there's such a disconnect between government and what people need at this point in this country. And so Vermont, we should point out, passed single-payer legislation in 2011, and they're working towards a state single-payer plan. They have the beginnings of kind of a three-prong phase, and it's something that's really worked maybe over 20 years in their state. Now, I don't think we're going to have a state single-payer plan overnight, but I am confident this is something we're going to get to. And just like gay marriage and other social rights that maybe have moved across the country state by state, I think you're going to see healthcare move this way.
Well, I hope you're right, and I wish we had all day to talk about this, because I think we could talk for hours and hours. But we are truly out of time, and we have to skip the This Week in Behavior quiz.
Aww. Okay.
I had so many Boeing questions that were going to be really fun. But that's all the time we have. So a big thanks to my guest today, Elena Matt, and from Physicians for a National Health Program, Dr. Daniel Lugassi. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Brian.
And thanks to the woman who is behind Food Bloggers for a National Health Program, Hannah Howard.
Damn straight.
The How to Behave theme is courtesy of John Lundbaum and Big Five Chord. Check them out at BigFiveChord.com. Thanks to Joe Galarraga for engineering today's show. You can always find episodes of How to Behave and lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Brian Kaiser. And seriously, just because Jesus rose from the dead doesn't mean he can't roll over in his grave every time you talk about healthcare. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.